Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of the Horsemanship Journey Podcast. We empower people who have had their confidence shattered or are experiencing fear to regain the confidence they once had, show up like the self-assured horsemen and horsewomen they want to be, and go from living small to riding tall. This is the Horsemanship Journey, and today I'm proud to present Dave Sanderson. Dave is an entrepreneur, best-selling author, philanthropist, and survivor of the Miracle on the Hudson. For more than 40 years, he's been a top producer of some of the largest sales teams in the world. More than 250,000 people have enjoyed his personal leadership events and experienced his warmth, humor, and his inspiration. Today, he's here to share all that with us on the Horsemanship Journey. Dave, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us.
Shane, thank you for having me today. Thank you very much.
Right on. Well, tell us more about yourself. Where did it all begin, and how did you get to be where you are?
Well, thanks for asking that question. I grew up in Virginia. I went to high school and college in Virginia, and my dad was a man of his word, Shane. He told me I had 30 days to be out of the house after I graduated from college. So. And I was not 30 days out of the house. So he helped me get my first job, which was a second assistant restaurant manager at a place called Howard Johnson. So, the old Hojo. So I began my business career, and I knew nothing about hotel restaurants. Came to Charlotte, my third stop. And, that's when everything started sort of changing in my life. And I ran into a gentleman who used to come to the restaurant. His wife, his name was Bill, and her name was Bonnie. And, they come in every night for coffee and ice cream, but I found out through conversations that he owned a string of movie theaters and restaurants through the Carolinas. And so he was a very well-to-do gentleman. And on December 24th, 1984, he came to the restaurant early that day, and he said, "I want to show you what I got, Bonnie, for Christmas." And Shane, it was a brand-new blue Corvette. I'd never seen a Corvette. I couldn't spell Corvette, never smelled a Corvette, but it was a cool car, man. And he threw me the keys and let's take a ride. And we went up and down Woodlawn Road in Charlotte in North Carolina and got back, gave him the keys back. He said, "You need one of these." And I said, "Bill, I'm making $13,000 a year, man. I can barely afford my rent." And he told me, he said, "That's your problem. It's your mindset. So let me show you how to be successful." So for the next 14 years, that's what he did. He was mentoring me for those times. But fast forward to May of 1997, he called me to his office and told me that, I said, "I got two things I want to tell you. First, I got lung cancer." Now, Bill smoked unfiltered Camel since the 20s. So wasn't a surprise, but, it's still shocking. But then Shane, he went over to his desk and pulled out these pieces of paper and came down, sat right here and put them on my lap. And he said, "I want to give this to you." I said, "What is it?" He goes, "These were the handwritten notes I wrote down in 1929 on how I was going to be successful." He said, "I want to give this to you, but you got to promise me one thing." I said, "What?" He goes, "Do not let it die with you." And he gave them to me. And he passed away in September of 1997. But now I've got these notes. And what do I do with them, Shane? I didn't do anything with them for about 15 to 16 years. I found them and felt bad because not only did I have gold in my hands, but to go back to what my dad told me. He said, "Your word is your bond," and I did not fulfill that promise. So that's a little bit what I do. I've had over 37, 38 years of sales experience after Howard Johnson, and I was a top producer. That was great. So now it's about after the Miracle on the Hudson, which we'll talk about in a moment. That's when everything changed and started taking me a different direction.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about working with these sales teams and how, exactly what happened after that period of with your friend.
Yeah, I was, I was a sales producer, a sales leader. And, it was, back then when you had teams, you sort of follow the corporate guidelines on how to do that. But Canley, Shane, I sort of went off the tracks because I was very blessed not only to have Bill in my life, but I had a gentleman named Tony Robbins who was head of security for it. And I learned sort of a different methodology on how to influence people and help people get their outcomes. And so that's I did that at a few different companies. And then, you know, when it came time to go out on my own, that sort of set me on a different pathway. So now I can not only do I speak and teach all these strategies that I was able to learn and implement before and during the Miracle on the Hudson, but take these strategies now and go to sales teams and sales leaders and show them how to really be more effective by, you know, be more authentic and congruent with how they go about their marketplace.
Right on. All right. Well, you talked about the Miracle on the Hudson. Some of us have seen the movie with a great movie, I thought, and you were there in real life. And so I just wonder if you could just tell us all about it.
Yeah, thank you. And I was also, you know, I had, by the way, Shane, I had three cameos in that movie. So if you go back and watch it, you got to watch closely, but I was in there three times.
All right.
Yeah. So, you know, here's the highlights of that day. I was not supposed to be on that flight. I was scheduled on the 5 o'clock flight, but we got done with work early. We started our day at 5 a.m. So we got done about 10. And, you know, my strategy back then, Shane, was always book the last flight out because you don't know how the day's going to go. So I had the last flight out, but then I had a chance to move up to get home early. So that's what I did. It happened to be flight 1549, or better known as Miracle on the Hudson. I was one of the first passengers aborted because of my status, and I didn't pay attention. I thought I knew everything. I flew 100 times a year. I knew everything. And so, you know, about the first minute into this thing, nothing going on, right? Normal takeoff. Everything's cool. Until about a minute after, it's when I heard an explosion. And that's what got my attention, because I never heard an explosion on a plane. So I looked out the window. I saw fire coming out from beneath the left wing. So I knew something had happened. But, you know, I fly a lot, so I knew planes lose engines and they have multiple engines. But no one knew at that point on the plane, at that time, that moment, what happened on the left side of the plane where I was sitting in 15A, also up on the right side of the plane. And I think that was a contributing factor that no one started losing it. I mean, I think everybody sort of thought, okay, we're just going back to the airport to get another plane. Until you start banking, and all of a sudden you see this bridge coming up. I'm like, I don't see, I've ever seen a bridge going back to the plane, back to the airport before. And all of a sudden, as soon as we get to the bridge, he starts crossing, and the captain says his famous words: "This is your captain, brace for impact." And that's the moment I knew that something serious was going on, because all you could see at that point in time was water in front of you, and we only cleared the bridge by roughly 400 feet. So you knew that things were going to get pretty serious pretty quickly. And that's the moment, Shane, you sort of start check in, right? I mean, you know, you see, I saw the movie of my life pass before my eyes, but more importantly, I wanted to make sure I was good with my creator at that point. I mean, because it looked like I was probably going to be with him pretty soon. And if I didn't want to have any problems getting into heaven. So I prayed, and, you know, I just wanted to make sure that he and I had checked in. And then about 60 seconds after we crossed over the bridge, we crashed into the river. And it was an extremely hard hit. He estimates he hit between 110 and 120 miles an hour. It's that hard of a hit. But after we hit, I got jarred a little bit. I came back up and I saw light out the window. So I knew I was alive, but now you got another issue. You got water coming in because, you know, the plane landed backside first and water started coming towards the back where I was sitting, towards the back of the plane. And so water was about knee deep, and now you got another issue. You got to get out. Now, I played sports, Shane, and one of the things we did when I played on teams, we had a game plan. So my game plan was, I kept saying in my head, aisle up out, aisle up out, aisle up out, because if I did survive, at least I wouldn't have a chance. And this is my chance. So, you know, I say aisle up out. As soon as I get to the aisle, I'm ready to get out. And something changed that day for me. That moment, my mom started talking to me in my head. And my mom had passed away in 1997, but when we were always young, she used to tell me something when I was a kid. It just popped in my head. It was, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And that, I tell people, one of the great things about my mother, which was a great lesson for me, which unfortunately I have not followed enough, is she made her kids make decisions when they were young. And so you had consequences when you were young. And, you know, I think that was one of the best lessons my mom taught me, because, you know, now a lot of us, including me and my wife, sometimes we just want to make the decision for our kids, and now they don't know how to make a decision. And, you know, all of a sudden they're all getting these participation trophies, and nothing goes wrong in their life because mom and dad always look after them. So I think that was a great thing my mom did for me, because I had to make a call. And the call I made was not to go out, but go back towards the back of the plane and see if anybody needed help. You know, I grew up in a small town, and outside of Cincinnati, Ohio for a few years, and everybody took care of everybody. So got to the back of the plane. Things were moving pretty quick because now you're about chest level deep water in the back of the plane. And things are moving pretty quick. And luggage is floating around because that's where the plane impacted and the bins are broken open. And I was making my way out, and the first light that I saw was on the right side. I'm like, I'm out of here. And then all of a sudden I looked out and there was no room on the wing of the boat for me. That's why I happened to stay in the plane for 7 minutes holding on to the lifeboat because there was no room until I felt the plane shift. And what happened, I found out later, is one of the boats as part of the rescue hit the front of the plane. And it shook the plane. And so that's when I started feeling the water up my back. And I was like, I got to get out of here. This thing's going down like Titanic. And I jumped in and started swimming to the closest boat that I could find. And I tell people that was the longest 15-yard swim of my life. Because not only was I 30, the water was 36 degrees that day, Shane. I was fully clothed, but I also had jet fuel in the water. And that's why I got glasses on now, because I found jet fuel in my eyes when I got back home. But I got out. And that's how I got out of the plane. And now the whole rest of the story comes into play about how do you survive and bounce back?
Yeah. That's something. So I read that, and you've just kind of explained that, but it said that despite, I think it was on your website, it said despite the hazards to yourself, thinking of helping others, you did the right thing and you emerged from the wreckage with a mission, and the mission was to encourage others to do the right thing. Wonder if you could just kind of go on with that. I think that's next.
Yeah, one of the things I realized after this, and I don't know if you see it, but I see it all the time, whether it's in the media or online or in person, but so many people right now, I believe, have to be right instead of doing the right thing. They're more adamant they have to be right, which causes a lot of dissension. I mean, let's look at the election we had a few years ago, right? Everybody had to be right. No, you couldn't even talk to your neighbors unless you agreed with them. And so I think one of the things I learned from my mom was if you do the right thing more often or not, things will play out well for the situation. And more often or not, it will come back to you somewhere. It may not be immediately the best thing for you, but in the long run, it will show up somewhere else in your life that will pay you back. And I think that's why I advocate and share with people, if you could just focus on doing the right thing, check your ego at the door and focus and not have to be right. And, I have to admit, for many years, I was one of those people that had to be right. And then all of a sudden I realized after this, how did that cost me in my life? How many times have I could have had gone a different direction, but I've had to be the person to be seen to be right. And that goes back to what I call the six human needs. And that goes back to it's about me being significant. If I look at to be right. And I always tell people, one of the things I love to watch are Marvel movies, the superheroes. I love superheroes. But one of the movies I think really articulated this point really well. It was the movie Doctor Strange. And I don't know if anybody's seen it, but it was at that last moment with the ancient ones ready to go to heaven and she's checking out and the Doctor Strange is saying, hey, don't go, don't leave me. And she looks at him and says, Stephen, you still don't get this. It's not about you. It's about something bigger than you. And I think that was one of the greatest lines I ever heard in a movie, because once that's what hit me across the head, it's like, you're right. This whole thing is not about me, right? It's about a bigger mission, and that's what I'm here to serve. So that's why I say, if you give up being right, you have to be right to do the right thing. More often than not, it'll pay you back.
That's so interesting. I think that, it just seems like an automatic or a normal response that we need to be right, maybe that's not true, but we think that we need to be right. We're constantly trying to prove ourselves right. And for some reason, it seems to be so important to us a lot of times, and I think unless we're intentional about it, that we just go around trying to prove that we're right all the time.
Right? I see that with a lot of youth. I see there was the youth. You look at TikTok, right? Look at Instagram, all the social media, right? It's all about them doing something and them being, being right. And it's this country's going, that's one of the biggest problems in our country right now, what you're seeing on college campuses. And what you're seeing that is like some of these youth, they've grown up, they think they will be looked down on if they're not right. instead of just doing the right thing. And like I said, if you do the right thing, it will get noticed. It may not be right now, right? It will get noticed.
That's so interesting, because you're exactly right. Because I think that whoever it is, whether it's me or whoever, if a lot of times we might think that if we're not right, that somebody will think different of us if we're not right. So then we're constantly trying to be right all the time, I guess, to so that people will think that we're a certain way, that we think that we want to be perceived, right? And then but it doesn't seem like it's serving us.
No, I mean, you come across inauthentic, and people will pick up on that. I mean, one of the things that I really strive when I talk and work with sales teams and in my speaking is, you know, when I think one of the things people are looking for right now in other people, whether it's the leaders they work with or managers, wherever it is, just be authentic, be yourself. I mean, you don't have to be right all the time. And the second point that I think that people are looking for is someone who's congruent. You know, they walk their talk, right? Whatever you said is going to happen, right? And your word is your bond. So I think that if you're focusing on having to be right, you come across as inauthentic, and you're definitely not congruent. Because Shane, I don't know about you, but I believe there's only one person who ever walked the earth who was right every time. So, you know, that was my belief, at least.
That's right. So, and we do know what's right, right? I mean, there's no argument that there shouldn't be an argument that we don't know what's right. I mean, we instinctively should know. If you consciously can recognize that, hey, I'm just trying to be right here, and maybe it's okay if I'm not, and maybe it's better if I just do the right thing. I think that we have inside of us something that we are just born with that guides us to what the right thing is. Does that sound right?
I think everybody innately knows what the right thing is. I think unless you've grown up in a situation where, and there are people who have happened to, right, that they've had very terrible situations, and if their parents are not modeling that, they probably think that is the right way to do it. But I think more often than not, most people are brought up with parents that are trying to teach the kids right and wrong. I mean, my mom told me it was black and white. It's right and wrong. So I grew up in the 60s where, you know, there was a model of the world, right? And I'll give you an example. You know, back, I don't know how old you are, but when I was growing up in the 60s, you had the Soviet Union and the United States. And my parents taught me communism is wrong, capitalism is right. It's right and wrong. And so I grew up in a model of the world that was, you know, all right, there's black, there's a dark side. And let's look at the World War II. Most people knew that the Nazis were wrong, right? So what happened? The whole world, except for two other countries, fought against them. So people, I think, know the right and wrong, but there'll always be some of those on the dark side, right? That, They have to hold on to it so tight because that's their identity. And the strongest force you have in the world is your personal identity. And people, if you challenge somebody's identity, all of a sudden they got to stand up and they think that's fighting words for a lot of people. It's fighting words.
Okay. Dave, I hear a lot when you talk about creating opportunity out of uncertainty. And I was wondering if you could just expound on that.
Yeah, thank you very much. Because, you know, I really never thought a lot about it till after the Miracle on the Hudson. And it really hit me when I was actually preparing for my TED Talk. And the backstory was that I got interviewed by AARP magazine. And I didn't know why they wanted to interview me, Shane. I mean, this magazine's for old people, right? What can I teach old people, right? It's exactly what I thought. And they said, no, I said, listen, there's a couple of universities. They were doing a study on you about how you grew from a traumatic life event instead of going to PTSD. And we want to talk to you about what strategies did you do to bounce back. So, you know, I share this in this interview. And all of a sudden, I got asked to do some TED Talks. I did a TED Talk about it. And it went viral because what people were really looking for is, and the real question, because the question I get most often asked, Shane, you may be ready to ask it today, but I get it all the time. How'd you get back on a plane after you went through a plane crash? People always want to know, how'd you get back? And I tell people, what I've realized over the years, what people really ask me is, how did you gain the resiliency to turn this thing around and from that uncertainty called a plane crash? What strategy did you do? Because some people, as we know, you know, went to PTSD or he either had depression or PTSD out of this, right? And if you've seen the movie, you probably don't understand there were some people that were having challenges, right? But what did I do differently? So that's why I realized, you know, you can create an opportunity out of whatever certainty you may have. You know, you can, it's all, and it all comes down to what the meaning you attach to it. And that's what came to me when I was in the green room of Good Morning America a few weeks after the plane crash. I saw somebody else who was a passenger. There's some passengers on the crew. And I heard this gentleman getting a little emotional. And my first thought, Shane, was, what's wrong with him? We survived a plane crash and we're on national TV. I mean, how bad can it be? And then what I found out later is the meaning he attached to that, because he was going through a divorce and lost his job. So the meaning he attached to the plane crash was devastation. My life went a whole different direction, where my meaning was, it was a blessing. Same situation, two different meanings, two different directions. And I created an opportunity to serve instead of going down a different direction or going down a place where it could have been a pretty dark place, all because of the meaning I attached to it. And that's part of the strategies that I teach people and how to show them when they go to a dark place. How do you turn this thing around? How do you bounce back and gain that resiliency to do it?
Awesome. Very good. Dave, I was wondering if you could tell us about your books, Moments Matter, how one defining moment can create a lifetime of purpose.
Yeah, thank you. I, candidly, Shane, I was not going to write a book, but you know, the backstory to how this came together is I was getting approached to write a book. But I said, you know, I've never written a book. I don't know what I'm doing, right? I mean, I can tell you what happened that day and what I used, my skill sets that I used. And then that's what was the genesis of the book. But how the book really came about, as we were putting our thoughts together, is I went down the street. My wife got a call from one of our neighbors. And they were two older ladies. And they called my wife to ask her if she could help them get their TV working. Now, you know, my wife called me where I was sitting right there. Said, can you go down and help them? I mean, they need their TV fixed. And I'm pretty good at TVs. I can figure this one out, right? And I grew up, like I mentioned, in a small town where everybody helped everybody. I mean, especially if you're a neighbor and an elderly person, you jump in. You just do it. So I went down there, Shane, and got the TV fixed pretty quick, right? And they asked me to stay and say, listen, we want to give some milk and cookies for your help. And I said, I love milk and cookies. I don't know about you, Shane. I dig milk and cookies, man. Especially from two older ladies who could probably bake, right? I'm all in. And we got these things called down south called parlors, all right? So they sat me in their parlor. And I'm sitting there, and they had a coffee table and all these books. And I was reading these books. And it's like, I was looking at it, like, these are about World War II. That's pretty cool. I love World War II history, right? It's like, I've never seen these. And they came back out with the milk and cookies. I said, hey, where did you get that? I've never seen these books. He goes, listen, we're in the books. I mean, I said, what? He goes, they rolled up their sleeve and showed me the letters and numbers down their arm. They survived the concentration camp. And I was blown away. I had never met anyone who survived a concentration camp. So now I'm turning the tables. For the next 2 hours, I'm interviewing them. I need to hear a firsthand account about what's it like. And they were two sisters, had a large family. The rest of the family died. And their mother told them, long story short, if you get out of here, stay together because you're the only people you can count on. That's why they never married. So when I got back to my office where I'm sitting right now, I called the lady, Cindy, who has helped me with this. I said, Cindy, I got it. All these ladies, I told her story. I said, these ladies made every moment in their life matter because they survived something, one of the most horrific things you could ever have in your life, concentration, and they survived. I said, that's the story. I said, I realized that all the moments in our life are there for a reason and a purpose. So there, you may just gloss over them. One day, that moment you did when you were 12 years old may come back to help you save your life or save somebody else's life. That is how Moments Matter came about in that book.
Awesome. That's a super great story. So interesting. I wanted to ask you, your book, Turmoil to Triumph, has an interesting title that resonates with us, in that the horsemanship journey helps people to triumph from the turmoil of the fear and sometimes the shattered confidence that can happen from wrecks with horses and just experience with horses. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about the process that you have from turmoil to triumph.
Yeah, thank you. It's when we were writing this book, this is actually, as I mentioned earlier, when I had my mentor Bill, he gave me these notes. This is one of the ways I actually took 12 of his lessons he taught me, and this is what the book's about. How he, in his early career, starting in the 1920s, grew a business. And because you're going back, I mean, when you look back at that era, he was during the Depression. He survived, did the World War. He also lost a son in Korea. So he had a lot of turmoil in his life just to be able to be successful. What did he do? Right? So this is what this book's about. So one of the things that I talk about in the book is, of course, I talk about faith. And that's a story about when he lost his son in Korea. Because what happened to me was we lost a son at 7 months. And he called me over to his office and I was talking to him. And I was sort of out of it a little bit. And he shared me the story about, you know, he had a son who went to Korea. He was in the army. But, you know, he signed up in 1948 because that's what you do, right? Young men served. That was the model of the world in 1948. And no one thought in 1948 that Korea was going to happen. And his son got called up to Korea. And Bill said, you know, I had resources to get him out of this thing. But you know, but we knew that he had to do his duty. And he died in Korea. He said, you know, it was a great loss. But I also know one thing. That the same God that started this world and is with Jesus took him and took your son for a reason. He said, you know, it's the same God. It doesn't change. The only certain thing you have in your life is your faith. And that was a great lesson about how do you turn that turmoil from losing a child around? Is you start, you know, one of the things he did is he started with his faith and say, you know what? There's a bigger calling for my son than being here. So that's what this book's about. And I share these stories, but the real lesson I learned out of this book, Shane, was this. I wrote every word of this book. And I got done. I'm looking through it and I sent it off to the editors, right, to do their thing, right? And I'm looking through this, and I said, you know what? I said, one thing I realized is this. The things that Bill was teaching me and taught me, it's the same thing my mother taught me and my dad taught me. But they were too close, right? Sometimes your mom and dad are just too close. Sometimes you need that third party, that mentor, to give you a different perspective on how you can bounce back. Because one thing my mother always taught me and Bill told me, you're not the only one that's had a bad time, bad day, right? He said, you know, Jesus had bad days too, right? I mean, you know, no one gets through this life without having a bad day. Your folks who suffer trauma or being paralyzed from horse situations, they've had bad days. But they're still here. So there's a mission for them. Now they got to use that situation and create a story around it to help other people so they understand, yeah, I survived this. I got out of it. Yes, I'm paralyzed or yes, I've had tragedy. But I'm still standing. Same thing happened with COVID, right? We got through COVID. We're still standing, right? So there's always going to be something in our lives that's going to be turmoil. There's always something. Right now, it's in the Middle East. A lot of turmoil. But you know what? Right. Yeah, this is not the first time this has happened either. We will get through it.
Awesome. That's a super powerful message. We appreciate that. It's so interesting to see really the, you know, what we do, like you mentioned, with the Miracle on the Hudson, the choice really that you made, it was just a choice to decide what meaning that you're going to make out of this. I think it's a super powerful message for all of us with the circumstances that what come to us, if we can, you know, recognize really that it is a choice and then decide to make the meaning that we want that'll serve us. It's a super good message. So much appreciate your time here today. Dave, where do people find out about you and the things that you offer, speaking and so on?
Well, thank you very much, Shane. Yes, my website is davesandersonspeaks.com. All my sources and resources are out there. And if you're if the listeners want to go out there and just check me out, you know, I've got my books are out there, but more importantly, if they want to go out and they click on the magazine, they can get a free download of my magazine called Moments Matter, the magazine. And there's stories about people's survival stories and how they became who they became that's what the magazine's about. Is I ask people in this magazine, Shane, what's a moment in your life that triggered you to help you be to who you are? So there's a lot of inspiration in the magazine. So they can get a free download if they go out there, or if they want to go to my page on LinkedIn at David Sanderson. You know, I write a blog every week about some new content that I have I'm working on or have implemented, and share that publicly every week on Monday or Tuesday on LinkedIn. So either LinkedIn or, more importantly, my website, DaveSandersonSpeaks.com.
Awesome. Dave, we so much appreciate you taking your time to be with us today, and we appreciate the message that you've shared with us. We wish you continued success. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Sanderson.
Thank you very much, Shane.